All right. Let's bring on real quick Leo Holman and Patrick Wood. Guys, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brandon.
Howdy, Brandon. Good to be with you.
You too, guys. We got a lot to talk about, a lot to talk about related to the FDIC. They're a new clip. They're talking about bank runs are coming, bail-ins are coming, all kinds of things. We've got a brand new exclusive report tonight by Leo Holman. We've got Patrick Wood, who has been writing about the North American Union for a very long time. Leo, you and I pretty much are the ones that broke the story, and then Gateway Pundit and others started picking it up the other night. But we broke it on the air yesterday, was it? Of the declaration for a North American Union.
It seems like that was a week ago, Brandon.
But I do
believe it was just yesterday.
I'm glad that I'm not the only one that feels that way, because my wife will say, you know, did we just do that a week ago? And it feels like 6 months ago, and it was just a week ago. I said, hon, that's because we cram way too much living into, you know, into a week. We're doing way too much in a given week. But all right, hold right there. I'll make sure we got you guys, because I want to remind our audience, look, if you appreciate all we're doing here, folks, we have to have your support, okay? So before we get into this conversation, I want to remind you guys, MyPillow.com, sheets, towels. I think Patrick could use a good pillow and sheet and towel right now. He's rubbing his eyes. He's looking a little sleepy. He's ready for his nap, and he's looking for a MyPillow. He's so tired. And so maybe he didn't get a good night's sleep last night because maybe he doesn't have a MyPillow. I don't know. But if you want to get some good sleep, then be sure to use your promo code B66. Folks, if you don't use that promo code, we don't get credit. And if we don't get credit, we don't have funding. We don't have funding, guess what? I can't sit and do this show every day and pay the guys in the control room, and much less the bandwidth bill. When I put these shows out on my website every day, every night at WVWTV.com, you know I'm paying thousands of dollars a month in bandwidth bill for people to watch this for free. So again, we have a lot of money to raise. Here's one way you can do it and get something in return. Sheets, towels, blankets, pet beds, slippers, sandals, mattresses, mattress toppers, and I mentioned pet beds, and I have to lean over to see. Can you go to a wide shot real quick? Pull down the lower third. We have to make sure everybody sees her. There she is, basking in the glow of the blue lights of the studio on her MyPillow bed. She's had a full dinner tonight. She's quite happy. I even shared a little bit of my chicken with her. So all is good in Delta's world there on her MyPillow. So again, check these resources out. Use that promo code B66. Again, if you don't use that code, we don't get any credit. You use it, we get credit, you get savings. Also, it works at mystore.com, home for American entrepreneurs. All right. With that, gentlemen, I would like to play a couple clips for you before because we got a lot to cover. And these guys are going to be with us to the top of the hour because we have so much to cover. What I'd like to do is start out with a clip I played the other day, but I think we didn't go far enough, and I'll get you guys' response, because I think what we're about to talk about all fits together, a lifeboat scenario, tying America together with Canada and Mexico in a lifeboat scenario. What crisis could they possibly have coming that would require such thing? How about one of them being a financial collapse? Listen to this clip coming out of a federal... Deposit Insurance Corporation Advisory Committee the other day. Listen to this.
It should be accessible when people need to know, but I don't think you have much hope of reaching a public that doesn't have a professional need to know.
I completely agree with that. I almost think you'd scare the public if you put this out. Like, why are they telling me this? Should I be concerned about my bank? Like, my insurance company doesn't tell me what they're doing with my assets. They just assume they're going to pay my claim.
Okay, so right there, if the public knew what was really going on, it would scare them. And they're going on to talk about, as the guy said before him, a need to know. And they talked a lot about a professional need to know that Americans live on basically the consumption of a Twitter feed, okay? That's it. They can't handle any more than that, and they don't really need to know anyway. We're going to keep them in the dark. We don't want people to panic. We don't want them to know the truth. Let's listen to what else he says.
I think you've got to think of the unintended consequences of taking a public that has more full faith and confidence in the banking system than maybe people in this room do.
All right. What did he just say? You got to be very careful with taking the public who has more faith and confidence in the banking system than many in this room do. And these are FDIC people. Why don't the FDIC people have more faith and confidence in the banking system? Because they know what's going on, folks. Because they are working on their Article 1 and Article 2 presentations, Article 2 being rushing in and wrapping up a bank that's in bankruptcy. Okay, and giving you pennies on the dollar or, oops, nothing. I'm sorry, you're an uninsured creditor in the small print. Make sure you understand what he said. Let's hear it again.
I think you've got to think of the unintended consequences of taking a public that has more full faith and confidence in the banking system than maybe people in this room do, that we want them to have full faith and confidence in the banking system. They know the FDIC insurance is there. They know it works. They put their money in. They're going to get their money out. So there's a select crowd of people that are in the institutional side. And if they want to understand this, they're going to find a way to understand this. There's a bunch of law firms represented in this room. There's a bunch of people that will charge them by the hour, a lot of money to explain this all to them. And it's fine. I don't have a problem with that. And they all have huge staffs. But I would be careful about the unintended consequences of starting to blast too much of this out in the general public.
Oh, well, don't be blasting too much of this out to the general public. Got a couple more clips, but I want to get a comment by you, Patrick Wood, then Leo. Patrick?
Well, the banking system is changing right now. And we know that the institutional side of banking in America have been operating on a complete different plane than the people that actually use the banking system. We saw this back in the meltdown 2008, 2009. When Lehman Brothers disappeared, nobody expected it. When Bear Stearns went belly up, nobody expected that, in the public at least. When the big bailout came for the giant reinsurance company, AIG, the public had no expectation of what really happened, and they never really told anybody. Those who were industry observers who had been watching for some time understood exactly what happened. And, you know, in that sense, if that news had gotten out to the general public, the whole banking system would have collapsed on the spot. That's why they didn't tell too much. And it's the same situation today. I'm not justifying it, but that is kind of the reality of it. The banking system, ever since the Federal Reserve has been instituted, it's basically a con game. It requires confidence to operate. If the confidence is not there, the system will not work. People will run the money out of the banks, they'll go and drain everything they can, and the banking system would collapse. They know that. That's why they talk about confidence. If the public loses confidence, the whole game is over.
Well, indeed it is. Leo, would you like to comment?
First of all, I do have a comment, but I also first have a question. Was this meeting a public hearing? I mean, these gentlemen act like they're in a private meeting giving this information. They're just talking amongst themselves, not expecting it to ever get out to the public. But what type of meeting this was?
This was the FDIC Advisory Committee meeting. So they had a lot of bankers and other people from all kinds of, from the industry in the room. It was a big, huge round table. It was full of people. And it's all being recorded, and it's all on the FDI YouTube website, channel and website.
Unbelievable.
So, I mean, but they just didn't expect us to go digging for it. You and I both know, so does Patrick, that there is so much out there for any of us to go see. They just don't anticipate us going and looking for it. Because they know, as the guy said, most people are just in a Twitter world. They're not going to watch this stuff. They're not going to read this stuff. This was like 3 hours and some odd minutes long. Only nerds like you and me, Leo, dig through this stuff.
Right, right. And my only comment, you know, is the Federal Reserve Act was passed in 1913 by Congress. And one of the reasons they gave us was that they said that we needed this central bank system to guard against bank runs. You know, but now they're admitting that if people knew the truth of how the banking system is operated, they would most definitely still be wanting to run to the bank and get all of their money out. And so, it, like Patrick said, it's just all built on lies, layers and layers of lies.
Well, and we know that the justification for the Federal Reserve was to stop runs on banks, to stop bank failures, to deal with inflation. But as Thomas Sowell points out in one of his books, I quote, since the creation of the Federal Reserve, as you said, in 1913, a private charter given to these banks by the U.S. Congress, We've had more inflation, right? I mean, yeah, really, right? And we've had more bank failures. So the whole justification for the founding of the Federal Reserve has been completely proven to be bogus. It was about empowering a group of people to rape financially the Treasury of America, to use it to control people and to enrich themselves, just as the former president of the United States from the great state of Tennessee, Andrew Jackson, said, who, by the way, did away with central bank, was censured for it, and then in his farewell address said, look, let me tell you something. Don't you ever get a central bank again, because if you do, your children and grandchildren will wake up in a country founded by their fathers, homeless. Hello, 2008 crash. They, the elite, the bankers, will expand the money supply when it fits them and enriches them. And when it becomes at risk of their assets, then they will contract the money supply that they've gotten the public used to, having a ruinous effect upon the population. He said, the bravery of your gallant sons is known worldwide. You no longer have to fear from forces external, but internal. Our greatest threat is within. This is the speech of Andrew Jackson. Patrick?
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. And this, you know, we had all the cards on the table for all these decades and centuries now, and they've been misplayed in many cases. The Federal Reserve, as it has existed since 1913, has been the status quo for all of our lives. This is all we have known. We understand the commercial banking system and its relationship to the Treasury and to the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, however, is a private bank, always has been, always will be. What's changing with the new financial system right now, this was alluded to in a key article in Wall Street Journal just this week. In fact, I posted that article this morning, the headline article on technocracy.news, Central Bank Digital Currencies Are Coming, Ready or Not. This is from the Wall Street Journal. There was a very important tell, one little sub part of a paragraph down in the article that alluded to something that I picked up on probably several months ago now, and haven't heard much about it, but here's the deal. When central bank digital currencies come into play, they're going to allow private citizens to make deposits and hold digital currencies directly with the central bank, that's the Federal Reserve. Now, right now, you can't get an account with Federal Reserve. If you're Goldman Sachs, you can't, but you can't. Nobody can, because you have to go through the commercial banking system. You go down to Wells Fargo or Chase Manhattan or whatever it might be, savings and loan, and you get your banking business done there. The very first consumer that gets an account with the central bank, with the Federal Reserve directly, we need to realize this, it's going to completely upend the status quo on the monetary system in America, because Congress will no longer be in charge of coinage and money and measures and so on. The Treasury will no longer be in charge of the amount of money that's created. The commercial banking system is going to lose deposits. I can't imagine hand over fist, but they're going to lose deposits directly to the central bank. That means that the central bank now will have the power to drive other smaller commercial banks out of business, and you end up with a giant monopoly that is run by the Federal Reserve with their central bank digital currency. This is something that needs to be processed by anybody that's interested in financial system, because it's going to change everything.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
And for those who think what he's saying is not true, all you have to do is put into a search engine FedNow, and read right off the Federal Reserve website, where you will have to have an individual and a commercial Federal Reserve account. So when you go to get a loan, you go to your local bank, who will be shuffling the papers for the Federal Reserve, and then they're going to tie it all to a social credit score. Oops, I'm sorry, Patrick. You're too white and conservative. Sheila Jackson Lee is working, as I report in one of my worldview reports. I can't remember if it's the one I did tonight or the one I have coming up tomorrow night. I'm reading so many reports in a given day. But Sheila Jackson Lee is working on a piece of legislation, piece of federal legislation to criminalize his hate speech if a white guy criticizes immigration or open borders or whatever. So you just wait. White guys, particularly white conservative Christians, are going to have a very difficult time getting loans from banks when they put in the social credit score system. Would you agree with that, Leo?
Absolutely, especially if, as Patrick is, I think, forecasting accurately here, that a year or two from now or a year or two from when they institute the CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, we could have a lot fewer banks. And it'll just be the huge ones, the Wells Fargo's, the Bank of America, the Chase Manhattan, and maybe a half a dozen or a dozen more who will be left standing. And we all know that bigger in this country, when it comes to corporations or banks, bigger means what? More woke. They're more in tune with their ESG scores. And so you bet people are going to be run through the mill on their social credit scores if we're just left with these big, massive banks all having a monopoly to basically run roughshod over the constitutional rights of Americans.
Yep. All right, let me go to another clip because we still have to get into your new article tonight, Leo, the North American Union. But I think all of this fits together. We're going to show you guys how in just a minute. Here's another clip coming out of the FDIC and one of their hearings just in the last, well, I think this was in November of 2022, so just a few weeks ago. Listen to this.
I wondered whether there are some market tests of whether you're being heard. And I think about TLAC. So TLAC should, spread should respond to good and bad news about the institutions. And it's really important. I mean, it's a little bit conflicted, right? I mean, it's important that people understand they can be bailed in, but you don't want a huge run on the institution. But they
okay, wait a minute. What did he just say? It's important for people to understand they can be bailed in. So they're going to be bail-ins, not bail-outs, just like they did in Cyprus. And I played a clip on radio and TV today at 1 o'clock of a lady in Cyprus that owns a restaurant, and she lost about $100,000 in American currency when her bank in Cyprus did a bail-in. We're already being told by the FDIC that they're going to do bail-ins. Their own paperwork we showed you from their presentation says it's going to be bail-ins. Yellen was telling us a few years ago there were going to be bail-ins, not bail-outs. So here he is telling you it's going to happen. Listen again.
About the institutions, and it's really important. I mean, it's a little bit conflicted, right? I mean, it's important that people understand they can be bailed in, but you don't want a huge run on the institution. But they have, I mean, they're going to be.
That's okay, they're going to be. They're going to be. There's going to be bail-ins. Leo, you're hearing this for the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to be bail-ins. There's going to be runs on the institutions, but there's going to be. Listen again.
It's a little bit conflicted, right? I mean, it's important that people understand they can be bailed in, but you don't want a huge run on the institution. But they have, I mean, they're going to be. That's, and it could be an early warning signal to the FDIC and the primary regulators when these things happen. And there may be some other prices, this is similar to what Jay was saying, in the market that you can tell whether people understand how the who's going to be protected, who isn't going to be protected. It would be, I think, an interesting study to look at the evolution of market prices in a situation like March of 2020, for example. And
so who's going to be protected, who is not going to be protected? And if we kind of get an early warning signal, if the American people are figuring out the bull we've been shoveling to them like they're a bunch of mushrooms shoveling manure on them in the dark. So when the public starts to wake up and realize that we've been lying to them or not telling them the full information and keeping them in the dark, we kind of need an early warning signal that they're about to have runs on the bank. I mean, can you believe these pieces of human trash? That's what I believe they are. It's my opinion. Any of these people want to come on here and debate me, come on. Patrick?
Yeah.
Brandon. Or Leo? I don't Brandon. Care who goes first.
Yeah.
Well, just going to make a brief comment that they could also flip that around instead of withholding information, I can see a case scenario where they could release or leak information against a bank that they want a run to. Wow. They want to see a bank run on a certain, maybe a certain smaller bank that is not all too excited about ESG scores. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is release information that maybe its balance sheet isn't up to par where it should be, and suddenly you've got a bank run, and that bank gets its assets get seized by the FDIC and closed down.
And by the way, don't think just because you are backed up now by $250,000 where it was $100,000, then after 2008, they boosted it to $250,000. Once the FDIC runs out of money, and they don't have enough money from what I'm reading to cover many of these big banks, they have to then run to the Congress and ask for more money. And of course, the bankers control Congress. I mean, that's what Carroll Quigley told us in his 1966 book, that the members of Congress are really controlled by the banksters. I mean, remember that, right? So the members of Congress are going to do whatever their banking masters tell them to do, the banksters, right, Patrick?
Well, that's what Bill Clinton discovered. I remember when he first discovered that, he said a few expletive deleteds and cursed the bankers. You mean I got an answer to those people? He's actually caught on tape saying that. One of the things, by the way, that we need to, I think, flesh out a little more is the idea of bail-in. The only giant source of money, of what I might call it free capital, left in America today. The banks we know are hanging by a thread. They're all virtually bankrupt in one sense. People are virtually bankrupt individually. Businesses are having trouble, small business especially. The only large source of capital left in the world is in the retirement system.
401ks, IRAs, 401ks.
That's right. And state pensions and all the different pension companies and stuff that people put money into. Who controls that money? Is it controlled by you, the one who put the money in, or is it controlled by the government? In the case of IRA, 401k, you can't touch that money without paying huge penalties. And the money is managed by the authorities in charge of the taxing authorities, normally the IRS, but the banks also have a custodial relationship there. This pool of funds, the retirement money, is equivalent to the Social Security fund that's supposed to be fully funded, never Thank was you. Because they ripped the money out.
Right.
And this has been a target. I have seen this as a target for 20 years now.
Yep.
The money hawks drool over getting their hands on this pool of money, which is absolutely huge compared to the national debt and everything else. One day they're going to figure out how to do it.
And they are. They were holding hearings. They were holding hearings in the Obama administration. I remember reporting on it.
Yes.
They were holding hearings on taking them and giving you a paper IOU like the Social Security Administration has done. I had on attorney Dan Eastman tonight during the Lindell report and before Mike joined us. And he's got a master's degree in economics. And he's been a college professor on this topic. And we brought this up. And he said, he's actually heard it kicked around, let's say a $400,000 in your 401k retirement. They take it and send you $400 a month until they've tapped it out. So $400,000, you're like, he said, what if you said, well, I was going to take that money and go retire, you know, south and buy a house where there's lower taxes and warmer weather. And I need that $400,000 because I saved it for my retirement, you know, and I was going to buy a house and retire. Sorry, you don't get it anymore. You're going to get a check for $400. Well, good luck, because now $400 won't buy you diddly squat. You know, it's like my friend Melissa Tate was in studio a year ago this past summer, whose mom was in Zimbabwe. And when they went to hyperinflation and were printing trillion-dollar bills over there, I said, what happened? She said, oh, well, you know, we know of people who have $200,000 in their retirement account, and their $200,000 under hyperinflation ended up buying them two bags of groceries. You know, I said, well, who made it? Who survived? I knew the answer. She said, well, it was those who had gold and silver and land and houses, hard equipment. And when it washed over and things came back, their stuff was still there. Everybody else's was gone. $200,000 retirement account had the purchasing power of two bags of groceries. So what you're saying is absolutely true. You know, I'm 54 this year. And when I was about 20, I had a guy try to financial planner try to get me to get a, you know, a retirement account where you did this. And I said, I'm sorry, I've been reading Larry Burkett, not interested, because one day the government's going to give you a paper IOU and I won't have control over my money. I'm not as concerned about the return of my money. Excuse me. As Mark Twain said, I'm not as concerned about the return on my money as I am the return of my money. So thank you, but I'll just work toward buying my first house and paying that off and, you know, following the Larry Burkett model, because at least I know I have what I have then, right? So you're absolutely right. All these people think, oh, I'm deferring my taxes. I'm deferring my taxes. And well, you know, how'd that tax plan work out when your account's gone, right? So I'd rather just pay the tax man, take the money, and put it into something that's a hard asset. So anyway, that's just me. Let's look at this. Listen to this other clip. Now you got to listen to this, folks. Here we go.
I'd like to go back to some of Dick's early comments. I do think it is hard to get a lot of demand for transparency right now in this sort of period of peacetime. But
do you think it's hard to get a transparency right now? In other words, I think we better be careful about being too transparent. Here we go.
Dick's early comments. I do think it is hard to get a lot of demand for transparency right now in this sort of period of peacetime. But that is going to flip, and it's going to flip probably even faster than we saw in 2008, where the need for communications really quickly in the social media world to avoid disinformation, to have some holding.
So it's going to flip fast. In other words, I think the crisis is going to be bigger than it was in 2008. What say you, Leo? Is it going to be bigger?
Oh, I think there's no question. The bubble is bigger, so the fallout's going to be bigger.
Exactly. Wow. All right, so let's move then. Is this what's going to push us toward a North American Union? You've been researching and writing on the North American Union, Patrick, for a few decades. Is this maybe like a financial collapse going to be what has to tie the lifeboats of America and Canada, Mexico together, as we saw on January 10th, 2023? Leo and I pretty well were the first national outlet to broadcast yesterday that we found on the White House website and the Canadian government website their declaration for a North American Union. Is it going to be a lifeboat scenario? We all have to tie our countries together to survive. Is that how we take this warning from the FDIC of the coming runs and bail-ins, and now we move to transition of a North American Union? Is it going to take something like that to get Americans to agree with it and members of Congress?
It's possible. They may well be tied together. They probably are, because money really is at the root of the North American Union. The giant companies that suck labor up like there's no tomorrow, the ones that ran to China to get cheap labor in China, for instance, when our manufacturing industries moved offshore, they went there for cheap labor. That's what this integration of this North American continent is all about, cheap labor. That's why giant corporations are pushing for it. That's why they've pushed the government to push for it. And this is like a bad penny. It just will not go away. It keeps repeating. But we've had several attempts since the year 2000 to form a North American Union. Always, and I say always, at the back of it, behind it, we see Trilateral Commission policy. This goes way back to the early 1970s with the early foundation of modern globalization. This has been their policy since day one, to overrun a system with immigration from other nations, break down the nation state, and make everybody, so to speak, one big happy family. This is what happened in the European Union. Same people were behind that are behind this. The European Union now, everybody acknowledges in Europe, is run by unelected and unaccountable technocrats. That's what they call them over there, because that's what they are. They can't get loose. We're still free. They want to impose the same type of system on us and transform our nation into something, you know, neutered, that we have no true sovereignty left.
Will the North American Union, Patrick, involve a North American parliament? How will that work?
Not so much a parliament. The idea was originally under Bush in 2005, the idea of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, SPP it was called, was to create councils, like, you know, regional governance system, not a parliament, not elected parliament at all. It was simply to appoint people, to bring in unelected people to run stuff, to run the security system, the border, you know, the perimeter of the whole thing, to to run the economy and so on, to coordinate the economy, to coordinate NAFTA at the time, that's a North American Free Trade Agreement. They didn't want people, they didn't want legislators involved. They wanted simply to control it from the top down. This is, by the way, this is a marker of historic technocracy. They hate politicians. They hate the political process. They don't want you and I to say anything. They just want us to obey what they say. And that's what we saw originally with the Bush's attempt to create the North American Union. And we've seen it again and again. We saw it under Obama. Same thing. Got together, shook hands, had all kinds of cozies, and who knows what they did. But, you know, we've seen it. We've seen calls for it now. I think I counted a total of 4 times since 2005 to implement a North American Union.
What do you know about, is there any kind of parliamentary system in the North American Union? I mean, how is it going to be structured? Do you have any idea? The reason I'm asking Leo and Patrick is because I have a book by my friend, the late John Stormer, who I interviewed several times and spoke with at functions. And John Stormer writes about how and Phyllis Schlafly were warning years ago how the George H.W. crowd, Papa Bush, the globalist rhinos were pushing for transforming America into a parliamentary system, because then they could get control of the whole government, and they wanted this parliamentary system. So the whole government goes with that system. And it makes me wonder if going to a North American Union and a parliamentary system would give them part of what they were pushing for years ago. So would there be a North American parliament, or what do you know, Leo?
I don't know about that, Brandon, but I do know that every time we sign one of these trade deals, like the Canada-US-Mexico treaty, that's the update of the old NAFTA treaty, okay? In many ways, the Canada-US-Mexico deal is worse than NAFTA in this regard. It shifts a lot of the decision making whenever there's trade disputes or whatnot, from the congressional and executive level of the U.S. government to these independent trade councils. And they can make unilateral decisions, and they can end up suing in the courts, all independent of the executive branch and the legislative branch of the U.S. government. So in a sense, we already have North American Union light, okay? They want to push it to the next level, and that's what we're seeing with this declaration, which it's important to point out for people that this is a political declaration. It's not a treaty and does not have the force of a treaty. It's a political declaration of intent. So it's showing our federal government's intent to create a North American Union. But it does not have the force of law. There's been some confusion on that. So I want to clarify that. But in a sense, guys, it's already here. We need to stop it, and we need to reverse the amount of this legislative and extra presidential lawmaking that's going on with these treaties.
Yeah, in fact, I just Googled it or searched it, and sure enough, I found an article from our friends over at Accuracy in Media from back in 2007. It talks about Robert Pastor, a top Democrat Party foreign policy specialist associated with the Panama Canal giveaway. It talks about him, you know, being an official with the Carter administration, advisor to Clinton, and his pushing for these kind of things. And, of course, it would overruling the Supreme Court. Pastor, this is last name, folks, director of the Center for North American Studies at American University, said that he favors a North American community. And then wearing a lapel pin featuring the flags of the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Pastor told AIM that he favors a $200 billion North American investment fund to pull Mexico out of poverty and a national biometric identity card for the purpose of controlling the movement of people in and out of the U.S. Well, come on down here. One of Pastor's students, Marlo Brown, the first American University undergraduate to earn a minor in North American Studies, notes that Pastor has a vision of a North American parliament and a step-by-step process to create it. So there you go. Wow. Well, and again, I go back to the fact that the globalists were, Schlafly and John Stormer were warning in the early 90s about George H. Bush and his crowd wanting to flip America to a parliamentary system. Now they can do it through a North American union that George W. Bush was pushing with Ted Cruz's wife, Heidi, according to, well, numerous reports, including my book, The Coming Religious Reich, that I wrote in 2015. Heidi Cruz was involved in that, which, of course, explains why Teddy was pushing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which Trump and Jeff Sessions were so against. If you remember Sessions at the time when he was a strong U.S. senator from Alabama, was just coming hard against the Trans-Pacific Partnership because it would create this kind of North American Union. All right. Yeah. So with that, let me move to anything else you want to say about the North American Union, Patrick, because you've been writing and warning about this for a while.
Yes. Just one thing, I suppose. When we talk Parliament, think European Union Parliament. This is not a parliamentary system like they have in Canada right now, where they elect people. Okay, where they hold elections. Maybe they're a little bit screwball compared to us, but you know they're elections. They're electable. That's how they create their parliamentary system. England same way. They people run for office. The parliament that Pastor talks about is not that kind of parliament. It's simply appointed people that come from the various countries. Whatever their positions might be in those countries, they're appointed. And they become the rule makers and the deal makers for the whole region. This is the heartbeat of regionalization. That's okay, what happened in Europe, that's what they're talking about here.
So understand, audience, what he's saying. This North American parliamentary system would likely be where the countries appoint people. Canada gets so many, America gets so many, Mexico gets so many, and they're appointed. And if this goes through, our Congress will be subservient to a bunch of unelected bureaucrats.
Yes.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's the whole point.
Whew. All right. Let's talk, Leo, about your latest article that's an exclusive. Medical profession implements World Health Organization digital diagnosis codes for the unvaxxed. Tell us about this, please, Leo.
Yeah, this article blew me away, the research that I found for this article, Brannon. Basically, every medical diagnosis that your doctor or any doctor can give has an international code under what's called the ICD system. That stands for International Classification of Diseases. And that's a system that was developed by the WHO, the World Health Organization. They are now on the 10th iteration of this code. It's called the ICD-10. Okay, it's been updated 10 times, and there's even 11th one in the works that you can find on the WHO website. But the news here is not that. That's just the background. A lot of doctors, by the way, don't even realize that these ICD codes that they're punching in for all these different diagnoses that were developed by the WHO, the United Nations World Health Organization. This is creepy. And over the years, with each new iteration and each new upgrade of this ICD system, like I said, we're on the 10th one, moving to the 11th, it becomes more granular. ICD-10 came in during Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and it required the digitization of all medical records. And those records, that the questions that doctors need to pry out of their patients have gotten more and more granular. I mean, we're not talking about diagnoses, you know, like diabetes, heart disease, cancer. We're talking about really specific situations and how the person's condition even developed. It's very invasive, very much a violation of people's privacy. They get into lifestyle questions, they get into socioeconomic questions, and some of these questions, here's the kicker, if the doctor does not ask them and upload the answers into the computer system, he doesn't get paid. He doesn't get paid for that treatment. And the big news with this article here is that they just came up starting in October of last year, and it's just showing up in many cases at doctor's offices in January of this year, a new ICD-10 code for your vaccination status.
Wow.
And so your doctor, do not be surprised if you start getting asked by your doctor, have you had your COVID vaccine? How many vaccines have you had? There's a code. There's an ICD-10 code for general vaccination. That is, it's for being quote under vaccinated. And then there's another code that's more specific, not for vaccinations generally, but specifically for the COVID vaccine. And then they might ask you, if you say you have not received the COVID vaccine, they might ask you why, and they'll upload that into the system. So you can see how this could be used in the future, given what we know about the G20 nations, who just came out of their meeting in November last year with a statement saying that they want all nations to implement digital vaccine passports. Could this be how the United States citizens are ramrodded into that system and outed for their vaccine status?
And don't
I think
forget,
that's part of it.
And don't forget, the North American Declaration concludes the component of health. And so this, again, could be all a part of tracking us, biometrics,
yes.
All a part of the health and keeping track. Because before COVID, we were doing TV shows. I was doing TV shows on the World Health Organization and the United Nations and the Bank for International Settlements. Before COVID, they were talking about chipping people or biometrics so that we could deal with the population crossing borders and make sure that nobody was double dipping on their welfare payments, right? But then COVID came along. So they were already talking about using this to track people back and forth over the borders. By the way, Davos tonight, if you guys go to worldviewreport.com, that's our aggregated news site. Here's a few stories tonight if you guys want to show this. We don't have time to get to. This is our Worldview Report right here, all right? And there's Leo and I on the rise of Satanism and the North American Union. But tonight, we got brand new stories dealing with, in harmony with nature, Davos speaker touts cities where people don't own cars, have a sustainable lifestyle. So he says, not a matter of telling them, you can't have one, you just make it where they don't need one. And of course, if the
right.
cars are so expensive, that they won't even afford it. So if you make the cars so expensive with all the regulation, no one will be able to afford it. People will be glad to go move into these little environmental ghettos, although they might be very nice and clean and gardens and everything will be in walking distance. There, people will say, sure, why not? I can't afford a car. And now they got you right where they want you, easily controlled, living in the same little area. You go outside it, you're going to pay more for everything. And then another one said, representative, this is a GOP representative. Oh, yeah, let's put our trust in the GOP. No thanks. GOP representative Maria Salazar urges dignity, quote, dignity for 13 to 15 million illegal immigrants in the U.S. How about they have some dignity and quit coming here and staying in our hotels at $500 a crack a night? And throwing away bags and bags of food because they don't like our American food, and they're cooking on hot plates in in hotels while they apparently have sex in the stairwells and get in hair pulling fights the ladies do out in the street and get drunk. So I mean, why don't you have some dignity for yourself and honor the laws before we can have any big time respect for you? You're lawbreakers, and yet you're begging for dignity while you're stealing trillions and trillions of dollars from the American people. In policing and schools and having to drop down portable classrooms. I mean, our healthcare system, holy cow. But here's this GOP lady saying we need to give them dignity. I mean, so we can kind of see where Davos is off to, you know, the start, right, Patrick?
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting how many people have been bailing on Davos lately. Something's going on there, Brandon. I'm not sure what. But, Klaus Schwab himself, 84 years old, he's not there. George Soros is not there. Some 74 other people said they were coming, and they're not there. Something
Gates
is left. Going on within the Davos community.
Yeah. Gates, I heard today that Bill Gates left the meeting.
Yeah.
Kind of a failed meeting. But trust me, they haven't given up, guys. We're not saying that, have they? Their meetings may not be a real hot ticket in town anymore, but they have not given up. All right, pull that music down. Pull that music down real low because I've got an important announcement. First of all, LeoHoman.com, LeoHoman.com, and Patrick Wood, his website, technocracy.news. technocracy.news. Patrick has a brand new show with us over at WVWTV.com. Daily 30-minute show. What's it called, Patrick?
Called The Quickening Report.
The Quickening Report. Live every day. What time?
3 o'clock. Well, 4 o'clock. Central time? I'm on Mountain Time.
3 o'clock. I don't know what time it is either. I forgot. I think it's 4 o'clock Central.
It's 4 o'clock Central.
4 o'clock Central, and then on demand at WVWTV.com, WVWTV.com, LeoHolman.com, Technocracy.com. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Now, before I go tonight, I'm going to let that music play out just a little bit, because before I go tonight, I have a big announcement, and I'm wanting to also let some of the audience for Diamond and Silk come in here and join us real quick. I've been texting during the broadcast tonight with Silk, and so I have this announcement for you guys tonight. And that is that Diamond's Celebration of Life ceremony will happen on Saturday, January 21st. And it is open to the public, but you must RSVP. And you can do that at diamondandsilk.net. Diamondandsilk.net. That's where you can RSVP. So Diamond's Celebration of Life ceremony will be on Saturday, January 21st. At 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The doors will open 1 hour prior at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, again, you need to RSVP, and you can do that at diamondandsilk.net, diamondandsilk.net to RSVP. But I've been texting with Silk, and it's open to the public, and she wanted you guys to know tonight that a date has been set for the Diamond for Diamond's Celebration of Life ceremony. Again, Saturday, January 21st, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the venue is the Crown Theater at Crown Complex. Crown Theater at Crown Complex. And this is in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Fayetteville, North Carolina. So all the details and to RSVP, please, diamondandsilk.net. All right, so Diamond and Silk, of course, their show is going to continue to air right behind me here in a second, but Silk wanted you to know this tonight as we honor the life of her sister, Diamond. So, again, wanted to kind of move over into their time block, let some of their audience come in tonight, and make sure they know about this very, very important announcement tonight, just coming out, Silk asking me to make this announcement, Diamond's Celebration of Life ceremony, Saturday, January 21st, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Doors open 1 hour before. And again, it is at the Crown Theater at Crown Complex in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Okay? RSVP and full details at diamondandsilk.net. All right, thanks for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care.